I personally, you know, I believe social media and smartphones getting on everywhere. I think there's a lot of negative evil and different things out in the world. I think it's the breakdown of family. I think it's a lack of time. I'm sure it's our diets, all the things that we're consuming. But you think about that. How would a 7-year-old know?
Like even know? Like how do they even know what that is?
It's terrifying.
Nice to have you here.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I think we've known each other on Facebook.
Yeah.
For a long time. But then we first met at the Limitless.
Okay, yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do.
I remember we talked because I thought the event was pretty good, except for that one speaker where we all, that's how we met in person the first time.
Yeah, well.
We all met outside of the lobby.
I don't love to go to events where they call me every bad name in the book. That doesn't seem to motivate me.
That was a wild event. I've never been to an event like that in my life.
Yeah, that was a little.
For better or for worse, like.
But we met, so it was good.
Yeah,
and I connected with a few other friends, so I'm good with that.
You're like it was good to touch base. Yeah, because that dude was wild. I wonder if they vet. Don't you normally vet speakers before you go to an event like that?
I would think so.
You think so, huh?
I would think so. That's what I'm terrified every time I do a live show. I was like, please don't give me one of those.
Yeah. You're like, yeah. Now you have to be concerned. You're like, oh crap, what did I do?
Yeah.
You're just yelling the whole time. Holy cow. I wanted to start off on a little lighter note because we have you here for a very specific reason. It's going to get a little more intense, not intense. What's the right word? What word am I looking for? Real?
Real.
Like sobering? Wow. Yeah. So you have the Promise to Live Foundation.
Yes. Yeah, I have Good Deed Revolutions, my 501c3. We have a campaign called Promise to Live.
Okay.
And every 40 seconds, somebody dies by suicide. In that same amount of time, we've created a challenge that we want everyone to do called Promise to Live. And you go to promise2live.org. We're asking everyone everywhere, whether you struggle or not, that if you ever find yourself in a dark place, you're going to promise to reach out to a friend, family member, trusted resource, or call or text 988. Mm-hmm. Currently, not enough people know about 988. In fact, a study says only 18% of the population knows. So we want to promote 988. We want people to find out about resources like NAMI, AFSP. And then once they make the promise, we want everybody to share it on social. And my story goes back to me sharing a very vulnerable post on social media when I almost lost my child to suicide.
Mm-hmm.
When people share the Promise to Live, it helps us start conversations and stop the stigma and save lives. And that's really ultimately our goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember, I think 988, is that the crisis text line or is that a different?
Yeah. Okay. 988 is like the 911 for mental health. And it just came out about a year ago.
Okay.
But still, you know, we're trying to spread the word and let people know that that's available and other incredible resources that people have probably never heard of, like NAMI, NAMI.org.
Okay.
And AFSP. I mean, there's incredible groups out there doing a lot of good work. We just need to let people know they're out there.
Yeah. What do you think is the struggle with getting the word out there? Because it's mostly like, I mean, I think they said suicide is the number one if between 10 and 24, right?
Somewhere in there. I mean, I can tell you that a new study just came out showing that the suicide rate among 10 to 17 year olds has gone up 71% since 2010. Yeah,
that's crazy. What's going on?
Smartphones, social media, lack of connection. I mean, I don't know. Those are just my speculations, but I'm one who my daughter tried to end her life at 12 and we didn't talk about it because the stigma. I was paranoid that people would be like, oh, Brandy only cares about her career and her business. She must be the worst mother on the planet. Just all the stigma.
Yeah.
My daughter didn't want to talk and mom, I swear I'll never do it again. 2 years later, she did it again. And thankfully her friend had the courage to call 911 or my daughter probably wouldn't be here today. But the sucky thing is when we got to primaries, they had so many kids attempt suicide from 8 to 18 that they didn't even have a bed for her.
Whoa.
Yeah. There was like this window of time where it was just ridiculous amounts. And my daughter's attempt was in that same window. And I remember at that point in time, like, I volunteered at the hospital for 7 years doing Nobody Dies Alone in Spiritual Care. Yeah. I sat with a lot of families. It's different when it's somebody you love, when it's your child or your spouse or your parent or sibling. It's different.
Yeah.
And I sat in my car the next day because we weren't sure what was going to happen with her. And I just said, I did a very vulnerable post on my personal Facebook page. And I said, my daughter tried to end her life. I don't know if she's going to live or not. And if she does, I have to find her help. I have to find care. Who, pleading with my network, who out there has gone through this? And I knew some had. I had seen it vaguely over the years from her first attempt. And that night, that video of me bawling went viral, had over 12,000 views. I woke up to hundreds of messages from people I would have never expected. And then we went back into the hospital. Another 10 plus kids tried to end their life. This is what the doctors and nurses were saying. It's ridiculous. And I prayed to God, like, please save my daughter. And I got a very strong impression that says, I'll give you a second chance. There won't be a third. What are you going to do? And shortly after, she woke up and didn't have long-term disability. And so this is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to go out to the world. And I'll also share, part of the reason I talk about it is because I never wanted to be the voice or the face or the person for this, period.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody loves talking about hard things unless they're a weirdo, and I'm not super weird.
Right.
But anyway, I used to be a TV news reporter.
Oh, wow.
And okay. I was in the Army. I was a broadcast journalist in the Army, and I'm used to being on TV, talking, sharing stories, being in front of the camera. I've done it my whole career.
Yeah.
After that video went viral, my friends at NBC reached out and said, hey, we saw your video. Will you share your story about your daughter? I said, no. I'll talk about a lot of things. Not that.
Yeah.
Too private, too personal, too painful. But then my daughter survived and I got that impression that I'll give you a second chance. What are you going to do? I'm like, well, what do you want me to do? I have a video production company. I have Vega Media Studios downtown.
Yeah.
I've been producing shows for 25 plus years, all kinds of stuff. I have a nonprofit, Good Deed Revolution, where we had done good deeds, acts of kindness, pay it forward to inspire and motivate people for kindness. So we pivoted. I brought all the nonprofits in. I said, what media do you need? How can I help you? And then about 2 weeks later, my friends at NBC called me back and they said, hey, will you reconsider? This has been a huge problem. Nobody's talking. Nobody will talk to us. And I thought, if I'm terrified and I'm used to being on camera and I'm used to talking to people, what does a normal person or parent feel like? So I reluctantly did it. And this is what I said, and I'm going to say it to you right now, your audience. If you're listening, stop what you're doing and go ask your kids, your loved ones, your spouse, your siblings. Ask the people around you that you care about, point blank. Dalton, are you suicidal? Don't beat around the bush.
Yeah.
Honest questions get honest answers, and you're not going to plant an idea. That's been proven, and people need to know that.
Yep.
So I said that on my broadcast with NBC, and shortly after, I got a message from a dad. And he said, you just saved my daughter's life. I said, what do you mean? He said, I watched your story on the news. I went to check on her. She was in the process of trying to end her life, and I caught her, and we're in the hospital. And then another family reached out to me after, and they said, hey, we saw your story on the news. Thank you for being vulnerable. We talked to our son, and he confessed that he had a plan to end his life this weekend. We're getting him help. So this sort of triggered what is now a promise to live, because I thought, if my personal private little story on local news could save 2 out of 20 or 30,000, what if we could reach 200,000 or 2 million or 200 million? And I was just a little kid in 1985. That tells you I'm an old lady. But I remember I was born in 77. It was a good year, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, I remember in 1985 watching Live Aid and seeing all the bands and groups celebrities come together.
I heard of it. I wasn't born then, but
yeah, rub it in. anyway, they were just saying, like, the world came together for the starving kids in Africa. That was one of the biggest problems on the planet. Well, right now there's this thing called the Grand Challenge, and I sit on the Synergies team. It's a global initiative, and they are saying the biggest thing plaguing the planet right now is mental health, suicide, and addiction. Mm-hmm. And all the experts and doctors and officials said, well, what do we do to fix that? They said, we got to stop the stigma. So I'm like, okay, well, what are we doing to, you know, to stop that stigma? And so this is kind of what we put together. And so last year, our show, we had over 60 singers, dancers, celebrities, influencers, survivors, and we streamed a 3-hour show. We reached 160,000 people.
Wow.
I'm pretty proud of that. We did it on September 10th, World Suicide Prevention Day.
Yeah.
And we're doing it again this year. We've learned a few lessons. We pivoted. We created the challenge because we want everyone to do that. That helps us in getting somebody to make a promise. So you talk about the power of a promise. I'm only doing this campaign because I promised the big man upstairs I would.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's way too much work. It's way too emotional. I have people who've said stupid things like I'm trying to exploit my child. I'm like, no, yeah. I'm just trying to pay it forward because I'm one of the lucky ones who still has my child here.
Yeah.
Like I got a second chance and a lot of people don't. So we're working on that. It's been a labor of love.
Yeah.
But this year we're excited. We've got actor John Voight. We have Colin Ray, Dr. Oz, Ty Lopez, Eric LeClaire, the magician. We're building it up and we're still looking for talent, influencers, celebrities. We want anyone, anywhere with any kind of following to join the cause.
Yeah.
It's so simple, but it can save a life.
Yeah.
So take the promise.
Deal. And I think I think another time you and I interacted on social media was around that concept because I do a scholarship in my hometown high school for entrepreneurship. And I did not realize you know, you just never know until you're that close to it, right? Yeah. So when I'm dealing with these high schoolers and we're doing entrepreneurs, we'll stay in touch, follow on Facebook or whatever. And there was somebody died by suicide and they wore shirts. I don't know if you remember this, but they wore shirts and they got there was a little bit of criticism and I was, you know, I had shared it and I was like, well, you know, talking about it doesn't cause it.
Yeah.
I learned that when I actually volunteered for the suicide hotline crisis text line.
Oh, wow.
I was a text counselor. And that was the first thing they told us. Like, you ask everybody, period, doesn't cause ideation, suicidal ideation. But it is kind of crazy because I remember the first time I remember crying in front of my kids. I woke up on a Sunday and I was reading through the Wall Street Journal and they were actually talking about a school district, I think in Highland, Utah, that had a big suicide cluster.
Oh yeah, I think that was Riverton.
Was it Riverton?
Yeah.
Okay.
They lost 5 or 6 kids.
Like almost within 2 weeks or something like that, right? Or
yeah,
it was an incredibly short period of time for that many to happen. And I was like, yeah, clusters are real. So then I think then I was like, yeah, that's true, dude. I mean, I don't know. Is this crazy? I don't understand it.
Well, it's one thing that affects everybody directly or indirectly.
Yeah.
You know, we're all going to be impacted. In fact, I've been working on this campaign. Yeah. I reach out to one of my friends. He's a well-known celebrity and very jovial. I'm not going to say any names. A lot of people know him. A lot of people love him. And when I reached out, I said, hey man, I want to do a story with you for this show. And he thought I wanted him to do a story with me. I was like, no. And then turns out at that very moment, he was contemplating ending his life while he's on the phone with me. And he just starts sobbing and he's like, why are you doing this? And I was like, you know, shared the message of hope and the resources and the things I've learned. And I said, man, you got to promise me right now. Cause in the moment, you know, sometimes we don't love ourselves enough.
Yeah.
We love everyone else around us more than we love ourselves. So by me telling you and promising you something, it can go a long way. There's studies out there that show if you make a promise, you could be up to 60 to 80% more likely to keep it. That's not directly with suicide or this, but you know, in general. But
in promise in general.
In general. So it's one of those things where people mask it.
You know,
we're losing actors. We're losing celebrities, people who you look at and go, man, they have everything. And then the rest of us chumps that, you know, try to act like we have everything.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're all suffering in silence. But the one thing I found is I reach out to people. Everybody has a connection and a story. We're not alone in this. And that's why it's the global grand challenge, because it's impacting directly or indirectly.
Yeah. I mean, I had a cousin of mine end her life. And yeah, I remember the morning we got that phone call. I mean, my wife was just in tears. Like, We had just seen her the night before. I think one of the hardest things growing up, like, I didn't see death very much. Like, nobody in my family died. I have all my grandparents. Like, and then I get married to my wife, and this is a little joke because most of the deaths are like older people, like
natural.
Natural deaths. But we've gotten a few, like cancer, suicide, and it really just resets everything. Like, it's a wild, it's hard to explain to your kids what's going on. It's hard to, like,
puts it in perspective.
Oh yeah. I mean, seeing someone one day and then never, and then realizing the next day you're never going to see him again is like one of the most unbelievable, like, mind trips to go on.
Well, and it's hard because also with the stigma, when my child attempted the first time, we did not talk about it. I thought everyone was going to think I was a loser and all the things, right?
And
as I'm looking out, it's people are afraid to get help for those reasons. They're afraid to talk about it for those reasons. And we're saying, okay, it's a healthy conversation. Mm-hmm. We talk about the birds and the bees. We talk about all these other things. This is something we really need to start talking about. Yeah. And not being ashamed. Somebody said, you know, they thought it was a sign of weakness. It's actually a sign of strength to say, I need help. And I've been learning so much. Part of my mission in this, like, what we're doing in addition to Promise to Live, is we're building out resources, a database in one place where people can go and say, hey, I'm a veteran. I have anxiety, depression, LGBTQ. Like, we're creating this database of all the vetted resources that people can find, because that was very hard for me. But we want them to be able to, we're researching all the options. Like, I just learned from a doctor in Chicago this week about copper toxicity. Mm. And apparently, I've been studying pretty deep into mental health and suicide for the past 4 years. I'd never heard of that. And he's got a doctor there who 100% of his patients who had postpartum depression, when they tested their blood, they all had toxic levels of copper.
Where do you get that?
I don't even know, but I'm just saying, like, we're just learning these things, like, okay, maybe it's ketamine, maybe it's toxic levels of this or levels of that. There's things in our chemical makeup that cause us to feel or think or do or experience these things that are not on you. It's not a sign of weakness. Right. It's a medical condition that we can fix if we know the solutions. So that's kind of what we're trying to do too, is build up this community and say, okay, what are all the options? What are all the resources? What can we do? How can we fix it?
Yeah. My main thing, one of my missions that I've always felt passionately about, especially since I became a dad, was fathers.
Yeah.
That's a big one. Men in general.
Love my friends at here.
Yeah. So I know Justin and John pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I started a podcast called the Fatherhood Podcast to kind of help, you know, just like bring a community where dads could just go, because it's like crazy and intense. And dads lose their life.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's like men's a high one. Like, right. Old adult men are pretty high in that.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers on that, but men are by far the highest rate.
Yeah. What do you do? So when, I mean, fathers are one thing, but what's also scary, like, I'm in two camps. Like, I have a lot of dad friends who I talk with, and my little bit.
You have dad jokes.
I do have dad jokes, right? But I have a lot of, like, you know, in that, my, I could only do the crisis text line for a year.
Okay.
I was crazy. I mean, we got text every day from, like, that ranged from, like, you know, I'm not having a good day to, like, this is it. Like, and they're everything is there, and they just wanted to text somebody, you know? And that was, like,
heavy.
Yeah, it was insane. So I did it for a year, because you're just a volunteer. So I did my time. I did my 1 year. So I have a little bit in there, but the other camp that I'm in, and my kids are getting there. Like, do you remember the last year in North Salt Lake, there was a
10-year-old.
Yeah. That was in my daughter's high school, or my daughter's elementary school.
Wow.
I, like, went to school every day. And I just remember going there, and I, like, parents were, like, enraged. Like, they were like, what the hell is going on? And so that's what I'm really concerned about. 'Cause I have a lot of ties. Like, obviously I got my kids, I do my scholarship there. There's a lot of teenagers that I wish had better mentors than somebody once they find out social media.
Oh, yeah.
What do you do for teenagers? What is the deal here?
I love what you said. you volunteer, you pay it forward. I'm a mentor. I volunteer with the women who succeed, and I mentor high school and college girls to try to help them, not just in entrepreneurship, but in life, mm-hmm. right? I would have loved that. I was working with the Fraternal Order of Police, and they were telling me that we lost a 7-year-old to suicide. Yeah.
How does it even get, my daughter's 7.
Yeah.
How do they even think about that? Like, what's happening?
That's part of the problem. Like, I personally, you know, I believe social media and smartphones getting on everywhere. I think there's a lot of negative evil and different things out in the world. I think it's the breakdown of family. I think it's a lack of time. I'm sure it's our diets, all the things that we're consuming. But you think about that. How would a 7-year-old know?
Like, even know? Like, how do they even know what that is?
It's terrifying. I mean, I've got a 21, 16, and 6-year-old.
Yeah.
And all of them have, you know, not my 6-year-old, but they've struggled. And it's hard. And so I think the best thing you can do is just talk to your kids and say, man, how are you doing? Are you feeling this way? Promise me if you ever feel this, that you'll talk to me.
Yeah.
Because there's help and we need you. And I'm not going to think any less. In fact, it's a sign of strength.
Yeah.
So even the little kids, like what we're doing with our show for Promise to Live, mm-hmm. we're doing a 30-minute kid show for 5 to 12-year-olds. And we're not talking about suicide. Right. We're talking about resiliency. Like, what do you do when you're feeling this way? How should you behave? What are healthy habits? What, you know, these kind of things so that we can teach them and you know, build that bridge before they get there.
Yeah. I interviewed Elisa
Butler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was really cool. I remember she posted that on Facebook and I was like, this is it, because I really enjoyed the whole idea of teaching resiliency and like grit. Yep. Like there is, because this is a question I've always battled with. So on the podcast, I'll give you just a listen. On the podcast, I've had women in business a lot. We've had, you know, people of color, and the question always comes up. It's this balance between accountability and like, it really is not your fault. Like, you know what I mean? Like there is something out to get you but we still have to be accountable. And that's a conversation that I think I've kind of navigated a little bit. Cause I'm such an empathetic person that my natural thing is like, if somebody comes up to me and they're like, you know, like women in business, for example, like I can't get funding like a dude can. My first thing is like, that's terrible. Like I want to help you. Like it is there is a system that is working against you. But at the same time, we can't live in that.
I got to write my first book last year, just a little chapter.
All right.
And it's called Bringing Value, Solving Problems, Leaving a Legacy. That's what I'm trying to do. We all have problems. And the thought that occurred to me last year is this: life is what's given. Opportunity is what's taken. And every single one of us have opportunity each day to figure it out. You have an opportunity to find mentors, to find help, to find resources.
Yeah.
Now you can sit back and say, my life sucks. I was born this way. I'm a minority. I'm this or that. I struggle with it. Or you can use that to say, you know what? No, I'm going to find the opportunity in this, because there is.
Yeah.
Whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you're right.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
And so
that's the conversation that I like to have around like teenagers. Right. But because by the way, like I'm pretty outspoken on this, like social media, we're going to look back in 10 years and be like, why the hell did we ever give iPhones to 12-year-olds?
Right.
It will be like smoking.
I love Gab for their safe tech and Nate Randall and the whole team over there. And we're working with them on this because we think that's a huge part of the problem. And as
people it has to be.
They see these dark holes. You can be anyone, do anything. There's over 500,000 predators a day online.
Yeah.
That's like giving everybody the key to your house.
Yeah, you get free access to your teenager. You're out of your freaking
mind. My little boy, no. He will get Gab, and that is it. Yeah, I made the mistake with my daughters, because once you give it, it's hard to take it back.
Yeah, it is. That's true. It's true. Yeah, it is true. Yeah, it's tough.
It is hard, because you want to protect them, and you also want them to love you. I'm like, well, everybody else has it. Yeah, everybody's dealing with these problems, and Right. For me, again, this week has been so emotional. One of my best friend's son tried to end his life. And, you know, you look at him and go, Kyle, you have the perfect life. And I shared this with the guy today whose son took his life. He goes, you know, I just don't get it. He was amazing.
Yeah.
One of the suicide prevention groups shared this thought with me and it changed my perspective. So maybe this might, maybe you've heard it before, but they said during 9/11, when you go back through and watch those videos, you had all the people on top of the Twin Towers and you saw them leap to their death.
Yeah.
And none of us sat back there and said, what a coward. I wonder why they killed themselves, because technically they all died by suicide up there. But when you look at it and you watch that video, you see the flames, you see the heat, you see the impending doom, you feel the flames and their despair. Anyone who's considering suicide is feeling that same heat, that same pressure, even though it's invisible to us, you know, and those people, we didn't judge them. But yet we look at the people around us and say, man, you had a great life. You had all the money. You had all the family.
Yeah.
Why would you do this? It's helped me be more empathetic to say they felt that same fire. They felt the pain, the heat. They thought that was the only option and the best option for them at that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild to think about. And when I talk to people in high school, it's just, so this is a thought I was having. You mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, so you get heat for even giving this message.
Yeah.
It's a pretty, you would think if there's one message out there, it would be like, we're trying to help kids not end their life and I'm still getting hate, right? I do sales training and like I'm a pretty mild sales trainer. Like I don't do anything crazy. It's called empathetic selling. I get heat.
Oh yeah.
And like, I couldn't imagine. So you get heat for doing things that like, yeah, dude, there's, you know what I mean? I couldn't imagine being a teenager and posting like an accomplishment and then looking at people dissing on you.
You'd be amazed at the amount of people who want you to fail or succeed, you know, for no apparent reason.
Yeah, like,
it blows my mind. And I always tell people, not everybody likes chocolate, you know, or I had to look at the thing because it was so hard for me. They said, you can be the brightest ray of sunshine, but some people prefer the clouds.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what you do. They're not going to like you or support you. And with kids, there was a gal overseas, Sweden, Denmark, somewhere. She's 16 years old. She posts on Instagram, hey, I'm feeling pretty depressed today, wondering if I should kill myself or not. 69% of her so-called friends voted yes, and she did.
Yeah, and that is
so-called friends.
That is what's insane. Like, you and I have a level of, like, everybody in this room has a level of maturity that when I see something like that, I can laugh it off, I can do these things, but a kid doing that, dude? Like,
no, they make these long-term decisions on short-term problems. And it's just, it's so impulsive.
Yeah.
It's so impulsive. And it's the hardest thing ever. You know, when my daughter was laying there and she finally woke up, I said, hey, are you glad you're alive or do you wish you would have died?
Yeah.
And she said, Mom, I didn't really want to die, but it was too late. Mm-hmm. And that's why I do this work, because I went to my friend's son's funeral a few weeks after. And I looked at him laying in the casket and I thought, he probably didn't really want to die, but it was too late. It's not too late for all of us. It's not too late for you. It's not too late for me. It's not too late for the ones. And you know, everybody says like, oh, it's such a big issue. I don't know what to do to help. Do something.
Do something.
Have a conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My quote that drove me last year, and I love it, is from Da Vinci. He said, I've been impressed with the urgency of doing. Knowing is not enough, we must apply. And being willing is not enough, we must do. Everybody knows there's a problem.
Yeah.
Everybody says, oh, I'll do something. Let me know if you need help. And then you ask them for help and they do nothing. So I've been out assembling and like running in the trenches and just trying to get the doers and saying, yeah, it might not be perfect. I might have misspoke in the beginning because I didn't know you shouldn't use the word commit when you talk about suicide, because it's not a crime.
Right.
I didn't know that, but I'm learning when you know better, you do better. So I'm like, okay, good is good. My conversations that we've had, I know have saved lives.
Yeah.
And if people just go, okay, the starfish story. Yeah, I can't save everybody, but I saved that one.
Right.
And this, what you're doing and sharing this right now, might save that one or that one or that one.
Yeah. Yeah, because you just, I mean, that's one thing I learned as being in my circles of fathers. It's like, you just don't know who's struggling. And like, and then I learned that everybody's struggling.
Everyone.
And that, and then I learned that you can find comfort in that. Like that can be your common thing. Is like, we're, this is just a dumpster fire and you and I are all we have. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to give up yesterday.
Yeah.
I wanted to give up. I had to walk somebody off the ledge. That's emotionally draining. My friend tried to kill themselves. We're doing the work. I was like, why am I doing this? Yeah. Why am I doing this? But every time I say that, Dalton, I have my why. Because lives depend on it. Because when we don't talk, people die. When we sit back, people die. Yeah. And it's something simple that we can do. We can make the promise. We can share it. We can talk about mental health. Yeah. Is it going to fix everything? No. But will it buy time for this person? Maybe so.
Yeah. I think I was talking to Nate. He was on my podcast. And we, you know, I proposed an idea and he agreed with it a little bit.
You're talking about Gab.
Yeah, Gab. Yeah, Nate Randall. And he, you know, we didn't spend a lot of time on it, but I think it's almost worth talking to parents too, right? Obviously, because a lot of them don't know what to do. Like I know a lot of people in the next in the above generation who've got teenagers, and they're like scared shitless. Like, I'll just do it if you just don't. You know what I mean? Like they'll just like, yeah,
terrified.
Give you the phone because of whatever, right? Like,
yeah,
or anything. They're just they're not doing it because they don't. They're just everybody's so scared. Like the parents are terrified, right?
Well, because you're in a hard situation, you're like, darned if you do, darned if you don't. You know what I mean? If I don't give it to them, they're going to hate me and act out. They might threaten. I'll kill myself. If you do give it to them, they might. We don't know the right answer.
Yeah.
But if you look at studies and stuff, I mean, it shows social media, smartphones. It's not good for adults.
It's not good for kids
who don't know how to regulate.
Right.
And it's hard for them to think it because, you know, they seem mature, but when you have 7-year-olds doing this and.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest things that and I say this with a little bit of experience. I work with kids in that scholarship program who blow my mind every day.
Yeah.
They're really awesome. But like one of the things that just like, I don't know, just hits me the wrong way when people are like, there's like, these kids are so smart and they, you know, and they are, there's a reason the consent age is 18 and there's a reason you can have to drink at 21 and you probably shouldn't drink until you're actually 25. Right. Like, and like, cause your frontal lobe's not fully developed. Like we have to like lead these kids. It cannot be reversed. Right.
Yeah. And again, like having these conversations, I'm so excited. I don't even know how to say it. I know my last name's Vega, but we launched a Spanish Promise to Live site today for the Latino community, because I have a lot of friends in that community and they're saying, you know, the stigma is just too hard. We don't talk about it. So now we do have a Latino version of Promise to Live. We're going to do a show there. I think people just have to get over the fear of talking about it. I actually had somebody say, so I should ask my kid if they're suicidal.
Yeah.
They said, but I don't think they are, but studies are showing, I mean, I don't know exactly, so I might be misquoting, but I think it's somewhere around 7 or 8 out of 10 kids have thought about it.
They have had suicide.
Maybe not have a plan, but they've thought about it. So if you think your kid's not one of them, you're delusional.
Yeah.
Even your little kids, my daughter, I taught suicide prevention. I attempted suicide at 12. I knew what to look for. I worked in media. I did all this stuff. I would go to schools and tell them and teach them the signs of what to look for. Then when my kid did it, I was like, what?
Yeah,
how did that happen? Because the same signs are like pre-puberty and the attitude and withdrawal, the same things that happen with kids in junior high and all that. So it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to know. You just have to be willing to have the conversation. You can have the conversation now or you can gamble.
Well, I read that book called Everybody Lies, and it was about statistics.
Okay.
Like, so like you just gave a good example of Everybody Lies, which is like, you know, 90% of parents say their kids have never done it and 82% of kids say they've had it.
Oh yeah.
You know, you're like, there's a humongous disconnect between those two.
You don't tell your parents these things, you know, but really I hope that kids, if they're listening, and parents and even grandparents, it's okay to have this conversation. I had this conversation with somebody very close to me that's older and I know struggles with constant chronic pain.
Yeah.
I said, I know you suffer every day. Are you suicidal? And this person broke down and started crying and said, I think about ending my life all the time.
Yeah.
It's too painful. I didn't know that. I knew that they struggled with pain, but now it gives me an opportunity to say, well, do you know about this resource? Do you know about this resource? Can we talk about it? Can you let me know if you're feeling that way?
Do you ever get over that feeling, you think?
I don't know. I don't know that you do. I think that more than anything, we learn how to manage them.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do when you feel this? Well, there's things you can do. And that's part of making a safety plan and coming up with things and saying, okay, yeah, that's what we did. Radical acceptance and safety plans. When I'm feeling this way, what do I do?
Yeah.
To get yourself out of it. Yeah. But I don't know that we ever like, you might.
Yeah.
And there, and there's hope. And some people are claiming they are. But, yeah. You know, who knows?
I find comfort in that radical acceptance. Like one of the things that, you know, when you talk about addiction, one thing that you talk with when you go through like AA and these things is like an alcoholic, like you can't ever go to a bar again.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's it. Period. You're going to struggle. You're going to have these things every day. We're going to make a safety plan, but like you may not, it's something you may not get over. And I think that that's a big one, especially for like, you know, I don't know if it's the right thing for teenagers because they're just, but like just being real with people, you know, like, hey, yeah. You might get over it, but it might be a struggle and it might just, and that wild stuff.
And I'm learning every day, every week, every minute as I talk to people and in hearing their stories and what works for some doesn't work for others. But, you know, I heard this talk I was listening to, I think Tony Robbins, Matthew McConaughey, when they did that thing. And one of the speakers said, stop saying I can't. And start saying, I don't.
Mm.
Oh, I can't eat that. I don't eat that. Stop saying, I can't, you know, I can't do this or I can't do that. Because that makes it feel like it's restrictive when you say, I don't. I don't go to bars.
Yeah.
I don't do this. I don't engage in drugs. Right. Not I can't. Not I choose not to. You just say, I don't. It's a statement. And that might be
it's one. A good
like,
one. Yeah,
and, you know, one. Their statement was, I don't do drama. Okay. I don't do death and I'm here to make a difference. I don't do rejection because I believe that we can all make a difference. And I think that we have to believe that we're here for a reason and what we have to say matters. So,
yeah, I'll tell you, I keep bringing this up, but, I think there's so many cool things. When I did my scholarship program, the people who participated, so there were only two when I do a boy and a girl winner.
Yeah.
I just make sure that it's as a level playing field as I can make it. And, you know, we went through the 30 or so kids and we were like, all right, so there were only two winners, but all of you did great. Like give us the feedback. And when you go through hard things like that, when teenagers go through hard things, they feel more confident.
Yeah.
Like the number one piece of feedback I got was like, I didn't win, but I turned $5 into $250 and I feel a lot better going out into the world knowing I can do that. So because my whole thing is like, I still think it's okay to push teenagers a little bit, like make them do hard things and like
build their confidence.
Yeah. Cause you
build their resilience.
Like, yeah. You got to know that you can get through this. If you can do little things and get do hard things a little bit and safe, right? All of my things were very safe.
Yeah.
If you messed up, it wasn't catastrophic. Mm-hmm. If you lost, it wasn't the end of the world, right? Because everybody made money.
That's where the growth comes. Yeah. I mean, if you look at your life and you go, wow, all the hardest, worst things in my life that I hated the most probably taught me the best lessons and helped me be this version that I am. Right. I wouldn't be sitting here if I hadn't gone through this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
Yeah. And I think that's, again, but you need, you know, as a teenager, you need mentors, you need parents who can help you see the big picture. Like this is it sucks. Like I also do wrestling with the, I help with wrestlers. And I love that one because it's every day. Like my son, he's 5. And so he'll mess up and cry a little bit. And I think boys can cry. But I'm like, all right, we'll sit this out. We'll, you know, you can sit this out, but when we start the next one, you got to go again, and he'll fight me a little bit. But I feel like, you know, as wrestlers, we get to teach the boys a lot too, and girls, Cedar Valley.
That's why sports are important in kids' lives, and martial arts and dance and these things that teach them about showing up, being part of a team, being dedicated, giving it your all.
Yeah.
You know, those are important life lessons for us as adults.
Yeah. And every time I have a conversation about like teens and suicide, it just comes back to like, I guess the one thing everybody can do is just, you know, do it in your house first, right? Like ask everybody. And then what do you do for the kids, man? Like
there's help. There's kids counselors. There's classes like with NAMI and AFSP and some of these other groups.
Yeah.
They have free education. They have free groups. There's so many things out there that people just don't know about that can start building that resiliency and the openness that you need to talk about it. Everyone needs to start with themselves and then start with the people around you in your circle. It's one conversation at a time. You don't have to be overwhelmed with it.
And
it's your circle of influence. Who do you know? That's how we built this whole thing last year. We didn't cold call. I just said, hey, who do you know that cares about this? Who do you know?
Yeah,
and we built this community and we're continuing to build. And that's what Here Brotherhood is doing and some of these other groups. And I love that because at the end of the day, it's the connection that can help heal too.
Right. And I, you know, Here is doing some cool stuff. They do those cold plunges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're partnering up with those guys too. I mean, I know that theirs is a men's group and ours isn't just about teens.
It's teens. It's everybody.
Young, old, black, white, rich, poor, doesn't matter. We're just trying to let people come together, make a promise, share a promise, stop the stigma, save lives, but also find the resources for their particular niche. Yeah, so we're broad, but we're going to have the education and information for all of them.
Yeah. And I just focus on like I mentioned earlier, my two camps are like dads, because I love that group, and then teenagers, because my kids are heading that way. And I think but you know, everybody suffers with it for sure. And I think, you know, this life just is hard, man. Especially like this point in time. We're talking about Sean Finnegan. He was like, you know, no one likes to talk about it, but we're in a recession. And like, damn, that's crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's hard. Like, everything is out to get you.
Cards are stacked against you. It's a tough time.
For real. And so you just knowing that, like, I know, you know what quote I always hated? It was like, you don't find comfort in the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
I was like, but sometimes that's all you got, dog. Like, sometimes that's where we're all at. So why don't we just like, you know, because peace is about acceptance, not control.
Right.
And so we just like, I think that, and that's the first thing, right? I remember having a conversation with my sister-in-law who was then in high school and my sister and my sister-in-law were good friends, and my sister has had problems with drugs. And I remember my sister-in-law going like, why? I don't get it. I don't get it. Why can't she? Blah, 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 blah. And I remember just having a real hard conversation with my sister-in-law and just being like, look, the first step in anything is like, just accepting that the reality of things as they are. And like, that's a tough one for people.
Yeah.
That was a hard lesson for my sister-in-law to learn, but
they're all hard.
Isn't it though?
Hard. But you know what? Yeah. So far we've survived 100% of all those hard things and bad days. Sometimes we wonder how, but
I do. Yeah, I do.
But here we are and doing the best. I like Jimmy Rex with what he's done with the We Are They group. And so I think, like, everybody looks back with all the things with the kids, because again, it's hard to be a a doer, but everybody sits back and says, well, somebody should do something. They should take care of that problem. They should handle this. Well,
we are they.
It has to be one of us to step up and do it, to admit it, to implement it, to advocate for it, to support it. Yeah. If not us, then who?
Right. It's that bystander effect.
Yeah.
If somebody else to do it.
Pull out your phone and film it.
Yeah.
That's it. That's part of the problem, right?
Yeah.
But I think I love what you're doing. I love that we can have open conversations. Yeah. I know there was a big movement within the entrepreneur world too.
Yeah.
One of my good friend's sisters, she was part of a bank that had issues and she died by suicide, 50 years old. Yeah. So there's a lot of people out there struggling again that you might not think.
Right.
And it could be you.
Yeah. And I get so frustrated with that because, I mean, I have social media for business purposes, right?
Yeah.
I try not to be a consumer of social media. I try to be a creator on social media, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like,
but I don't think you can do one without the other.
I know. I'm not perfect. Yeah, I'm not perfect. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I can't help but think sometimes that, like, doing a social media fast every once in a while, because everybody, it looks like everybody's got it together. But I know, like, I'm here to say no.
No.
Right? Like,
no, I was just with you 5 minutes ago. Everything you posted is like make-believe land. I know you just were fighting with your husband. You wanted to strangle your kids and you're telling me you have the perfect life.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Liar.
And so just don't post it. Yeah. How about that? How about you just like, it's okay.
Show some of those moments. I mean, I try to be real. It's funny because I just got my new headshot done and I love the photographer, but he sent it to me and it was like super photoshopped. I said, man, I don't use filters.
Yeah,
because I'm me. I want people to know me and recognize me. I want to be authentic. And obviously you want to look your best self.
Sure.
But I think that's part of our problem is we're always presenting this unrealistic expectation of who we are and what we represent and how glamorous and how successful. And it's bull crap.
Yeah, it's not real.
Like show up with the zit on your face. I had one all last week. It was horrible. I did ask him to get rid of that.
But, sure. Because I was going to be there longer than
this. Because it was gone this week, right?
Right, exactly. No, it's good. But I'll tell you what, though. That's one rule my wife has me and my wife have with my daughter. She got a camera for Christmas. And we were like, no filters.
No. You're not allowed to play around and be black a kitty and white. Cat,
Yeah.
But like glamours.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah, no.
Because you can never live up to the expectation. You see yourself as something you're not really. And I want people when they meet me to go, that's who she is.
Yeah.
I want them to go, wow, she's even better maybe than I thought. I don't want them to be like, who is this plain Jane? I thought I was getting like.
Yeah, right. I know it is wild how you take a headshot and like people look nothing like their picture on social media. You're like, what the
I had people show up at my studio and I'm looking at them all. Can I help you? And they go, I'm so-and-so. I was like, huh? You know, we were talking on LinkedIn. We have an appointment. I was like, that's you?
Yeah, you're like,
I had no idea. Like,
whoa,
like,
dude, maybe we'll just chill out on the filters. Yeah. That. What a wild thing. I'm super happy to have this, have you on. And, you know, give the link to everybody. Where do they find the Promise to Live?
It's promise2live.org. Promise2. And the reason we have a number two on there, it's twofold. The first one you make is for yourself. The second one you do is for everyone else. It's two steps. It's promise2live.org. Take it, share it. It's simple, takes less than 40 seconds. And you can think about that as you make it, that during this time, somebody else took their life. Why did they take their life? Because maybe they thought they were alone. Maybe they didn't know about 988. Maybe they were too afraid to talk about it. Then once you share it, they go, wow, Dalton shared this thing publicly. Like, maybe I can talk to him.
Yeah.
Or maybe I can look at these resources. I thought he was totally put together. If he's struggling, maybe I'm not completely broken.
Yeah.
That's what it does. It allows us to feel some peace, some comfort, to have the conversation, stop stigma,
and
save lives.
That's right. Amen. Well, thank you so much, Brandy.
Thank you for having me.